Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Eco Money on Money FM 89.3, where we bring you the latest in sustainability and finance. I'm Rachel Kelly. Today we're going to take a look at the economic opportunities for the region when it comes to sustainability and climate change. According to a recent report by Bain & Company, amid accelerating global momentum and investment in addressing sustainability and climate change, Southeast Asia is not a leader today, yet given its share of global population and biodiversity, it should play a far larger role. Bain adds that the region is waking up and could leapfrog to a greener 2030, and that this could represent $1 trillion in annual opportunity. So what is needed to help regional economies move in this direction, benefiting not just the climate, but business too? Well, we're joined today by Dale Hardcastle, a partner in Bain & Company's Singapore office, where he leads the Southeast Asia Energy and Natural Resources team. Dale is also the co-director of Bain's Global Sustainability Innovation Centre in Singapore, an ESG focus centre established to help companies accelerate the time to impact in their sustainability strategies and path to a low-carbon economy. Dale, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Rachel. Wonderful to be here.
So, Dale, in the recent report, you wrote that amid accelerating global momentum towards sustainability and climate change, Southeast Asia isn't the leader today that perhaps it should be. So what's holding the region back, and where do we go from here?
Yeah, Rachel, I think, you know, as we think about sort of sustainability, we often read, you know, a great deal in the newspaper and the press and other things, and it's very much, you know, top of mind for many of us as we think about our day-to-day lives, whether it's plastic and other things. But if we actually, you know, look at, you know, where Southeast Asia sort of stands today, it has in some ways, you know, been a bit of a laggard versus, of course, you know, what we've seen from other economies like, you know, even sort of China or other parts of Asia. And there's probably been, I think, a number of different things that have, you know, slowed the development of sustainability sort of concerns and sort of industries here. One, you know, a strong sort of, you know, presence of, you know, vested interests from some existing industries, and, you know, challenges that may exist in helping them be able to, you know, finance sort of changing away from legacy businesses they have to sustainable or newer ones. And of course, you know, a lot of industries that are very important to the economies in the region and companies here, such as sort of, you know, oil and gas, you know, mining and other sort of agricultural sectors. So there are a lot of trade-offs in thinking about, you know, making the shift and moving sort of capital from the industries of old that have been the bedrocks of the economy to ones that maybe are newer and less established, but have, you know, good prospects in the future.
And moving in that direction represents quite a significant opportunity. And we're talking an opportunity to the tune of $1 trillion, no small amount. What makes up this figure? Where are the opportunities? How can we grab a slice of that pie?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think from our sort of perspective at Bain and, you know, many of the clients and others that we've sort of talked to, be that, you know, local sort of companies or other global companies around the world, there's a lot of sort of interest in what is the potential of the green economy in Southeast Asia. And that led us to do a fair bit of sort of work in the last year tied in with our launch of our new sort of innovation center around sustainability to try to size the prize of what's really going to happen if we move to a greener economy. And specifically looked a lot at the environmental sort of aspects and how, you know, adopting those aspects would actually sort of help to address, you know, even sort of bigger, you know, ESG ambitions, which also have other benefits for the region. So we tried to look at, you know, really, I guess, sort of two different sort of elements of kind of economic potential. You know, one, where are the sort of new sources of revenue for sort of companies and sort of countries as they think about new products and services, be it for sustainable production and consumption? And also, you know, where can we get sort of more efficiencies by being more sustainable or releasing land, water, or other things, you know, back for other sort of uses? And really thinking about the sort of umbrella falls under, you know, four different sort of things. You know, one, we see a lot of sort of potential within the energy and resource sector to the tune of, you know, probably about $100 sort of, you know, billion dollars sort of there as we sort of shift to sort of renewables, alternative fuels and other things. There's also, I think, a lot of sort of potential in the region around sort of, you know, food systems, be that kind of rethinking with the way we do agriculture, new ways, alternative proteins, functional foods, and a lot of other things, which is probably, you know, another sort of $75 billion. A lot of potential also within, you know, industry and sort of logistics, you know, with kind of sort of big supply chains that sort of connect from here to the rest of the world, a lot of opportunities to rethink that and be more sort of efficient. And of course, you know, a big sort of transition around the cities that are the bedrock of the region. As we look at, you know, mobility 2.0, electric vehicles, and a lot of other sort of things there, which also, you know, offers a lot of sort of new potential from economic benefit for sort of companies and other people looking to invest.
When you talk about the timeline for these figures, because you mentioned in the report that the $1 trillion opportunity is really an opportunity by 2030, with, as you mentioned, the region becoming a global leader in 8 priority transformation pathways. Can you tell us more about those 8 strategic pathways to unlock Southeast Asia's green economy potential? Just elaborate a little bit on them.
Well, I think there's probably, I mean, 2 different ways we should also sort of
okay.
think about it. I mean, because, you know, if we look at sort of, you know, what's happened over the last sort of 12 months, you know, it's really sort of pronounced the degree to which, you know, COVID has sort of accelerated the push to the green economy. And whether we look at sort of the EU New Deal or sort of, you know, what's happened in sort of China or, of course, you know, what, you know, President Biden seeks to sort of push, we really see, I think, a bit of an arms race as we look at sort of regions and sort of countries around the world to try to build these new industries for the future. So what we've tried to do is sort of think about sort of Southeast Asia from 2 different sort of perspectives. You know, one, where are there sort of opportunities for us to build sort of a competitive edge, potentially sort of industries where we could sort of innovate and sort of export solutions to the rest of the world? Whereas there are other areas where maybe we need to think about sort of innovation to solve, you know, critical sort of problems that sort of and looking at kind of, you know, both those sort of different sort of areas.
So what does this mean for businesses, though? Because not all businesses can shift and pivot into industries such as you mentioned, alternative protein. What are some of the low-hanging fruit that they can look at when they're looking to tap onto this momentum?
Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, as you say, there's a lot of sort of challenges for businesses to think mm-hmm. about what to do. You know, particularly, I think, you know, many, you know, companies in this part of the world have been very focused on their P&L and sort of growth mm. and meeting other sort of challenges, and have not necessarily, you know, thought immensely around, you know, sustainability and the like. But that is beginning to change, you know, I think in a pronounced way as we see, you know, increasing sort of pressure from investors, asking companies around about their sort of sustainability strategies, you know, what is their pathway to sort of be greener and what can they sort of do? And we find it's, you know, it's quite interesting to think first about, you know, where are these sort of opportunities to think about sort of sustainability and green in ways that cascade straight through the bottom line. You know, we like to say if a company has sort of a carbon problem, it very often has an energy problem, which means, you know, there's an efficiency opportunity and other things there. But coming back to, I guess, your question, we see probably a number of different areas where people can sort of, you know, focus out of the gate. Mm-hmm. You know, one definitely appears to be, so I think, more opportunities to accelerate the penetration of renewable energy, you know, across the region. We've seen a lot of, you know, growth over the sort of last few years, but we're still sort of well behind what has happened in other parts of the world. And as investors and others are showing less willingness to sort of finance new coal plants and other things, there's definitely sort of an opportunity to step up there. I think there's also a lot of opportunities around improving traceability and sort of supply chains and setting up sort of common standards to help companies be able to innovate there.
Digitization as well.
Digitization and sort of traceability and other things that, you know, corporate MNCs are sort of asking for today, you know, consumers are asking for, and, you know, opportunities there to both be sort of greener, but also be a lot more sort of efficient. There are a lot of opportunities as well in the circular economy to be more efficient around sort of recycling and other things, which, you know, where Asia is really the front and center of some of the issues and challenges around, you know, ocean waste and other things.
And Dale, I have to ask you, you know, we have seen a huge shift this year towards sustainability. I've been covering this for close to a decade now, and I've never received so many press releases, announcements, and, you know, updates in my inbox on a daily basis. And a lot of this has come on the back of COVID-19. Do you think, though, that this momentum will continue? Because right now, obviously, we're still a year on from the pandemic. Do you think this momentum for climate change will continue once we're past COVID-19, once things start to go back to normal again? Do you think this will still be at the forefront of business focus, economic focus,
government policy and shift? Or do you think this will be something that could perhaps slow down once we return to normalcy, as they say?
Rachel, I think that's a great question. And, you know, one we get asked by, you know, every sort of investor and company mm-hmm. that we talk to. And I would say that, you know, the answer is definitively, you know, yes, in our sort of perspective. And I think for a number of different reasons that are sort of driving it. You know, first, as I alluded to earlier, there's increasing pressure from investors to see more sort of progress and sort of tangible results from all companies around their ESG and sort of climate change sort of strategies. And if anything, I would say that is sort of gaining momentum, not sort of slowing. Second, there's increasing pressure from the leaders. If we look at the big sort of MNCs around the world, you know, the Googles, the Microsofts, the Nikes, and others, who have, you know, set the sort of pace around sort of sustainability, mm-hmm. they themselves have significantly raised their own sort of aspirations in terms of what they seek to achieve with net zero and other targets by the end of the decade. And the only way that, you know, those companies can begin to even begin to meet those sort of goals is if they, you know, push change deeper into their sort of supply chains and logistics networks. And many of those sort of suppliers and sort of producers of, you know, raw materials and other things are in this part of the world. So when we talk to those sort of companies today, you know, Asia is very much sort of front and center in what they want to do. I think they're looking for more sort of collective action as they realize that these challenges are ones that they themselves can't sort of take on. And we definitely sort of expect there's going to be more and more sort of push there. And I guess one last element, of course, is the fact that, you know, finance is also moving in this direction. And we're seeing, you know, a sort of disconnect between, you know, companies who are much more sort of green, who are able to access green bonds and other sort of financing and lower cost of capital versus, you know, companies that are lagging behind who are seeing, you know, their banks giving them increasing sort of pressure as they renew bonds and other things at higher basis points and the like. So, you know, to me, there's, I think, a number of sort of drivers there, which then are reinforced by what's happening with sort of consumers and the like. So we're very bullish on what's going to happen for the next few years and think, you know, the ability to be, you know, more green or more sustainable is going to be key to, you know, companies' competitive advantage, be that in Singapore, ASEAN, or more broadly.
Wonderful. Well, Dale, thank you for all of those updates. That was really insightful.
Wonderful. Happy to talk anytime, Rachel.
We've been speaking with Dale Hardcastle, a partner in Bain & Company's Singapore office, where he leads the Southeast Asia Energy and Natural Resources team. This has been Eco Money on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.